The Province Sports Podcast. Special draft day edition of the Patcast, and it takes a big deal to get us assembled here on a sunny Saturday, but we've done that. Botchard's here. We're back in the Patcast Palace, if you will, the province office. We were out at Eagle Ridge on Monday for the live Patcast, and we want to thank everybody at Eagle Ridge GM. They've been our partners in this podcast production throughout the hockey season, and it was fun to meet some of the fans of the Patcast. We posed for some photos, did a little Q&A at the after end show. Of the set. Yeah, the after party, if you will. So it was great to meet those people. Saw them giving us a little love on Twitter, and thanks to Eagle Ridge, great hosts for a podcast like that one, and they've been great partners. Again, you can find them, 2595 Barnett Highway. Botch can tell you, the spot or the showroom looked spotless the other night.
That's nice.
Sun is shining. Great day to get it into a vehicle, take a test spin, and you can start your search for a new car online at eagleridgegm.com. Now, hottest day of the year, Botch. And here we are sitting in a...
Where else would we rather
exactly.
be?
Exactly. There is no place.
But to be fair, I mean, there's been a tremendous string of massive news. It seems like one hit after another. Probably, maybe none bigger than your news this week that you have returned triumphantly in a full-time position to 1040. And I'm so super honestly stoked about this. I remember when... I guess 18, 20 months ago when you were, I guess, let go, bought out, whatever. And, I was in panic. I didn't know you then as well as I know you now. But I was in panic because, I mean, it's really, the beat is really hard. Like it's hard to have, you know, especially with the numbers of media dwindling, it's hard to extract good moments in post game scrums. Good quotes from the coach. Like, you need guys out there to ask relevant, tough questions. You were one of the guys I thought was the best at it. You do have this very, I've pointed out many times, a really disarming style, like where you ask these brutal questions and like no one ever seems to get mad about it. So in my own self-interest, I met with the higher ups at the province and I'm like, we gotta find a way to save Jay. We can't let him go to like some PR job and lose this guy off the Canucks. And unbeknownst to me, like Ed stepped up. I didn't even know that you and Ed were tight, but Ed stepped up. He met with the higher ups and it started the ball rolling, which has led us here to where we are today. And I'm like, I think the job is awesome for you. I mean, it's great for TSN 1040. You're going to be on the road, I guess, all road games. And the road is the worst because, you know, it's often like me, Joey, maybe Murph, that's it, you know, asking questions to Willie. They don't really have, those guys aren't interested in badgering them with a series of questions. You will be.
Oh, yeah.
So super fired up on the road badgering sessions with Travis Green.
I'm going to pack my V-necks in a suitcase and I will be in full badger mode. No question about it. No, I mean, it's exciting on so many levels. My wife will no longer be badgering me about when I'm going to get a job. We've taken care of that. I've seen one Canuck game in my life on the road. It was in San Jose. It was last season. I went on a little junket. I'm excited to get around and see these rinks that I've watched them play in for years. And, now you'll have somebody that can accompany you on that cab trip in Buffalo or St. Louis when you're,
right.
you know, you need the cold medication and yeah. Gotta so, tales from the road. Look, when the landscape changed in this market this year, in a radio and there was, the announcement that, there was competition coming in, I just wanted to believe that there was a place at the table for me somehow, some way. I thought to myself, like, my God, if there isn't a job to be had this summer of all years with two all sports radios, at that point, then that's probably the world, you know, the universe talking to me and telling me to move along and do something else. But, I had some decisions to make and, this just seemed like the right fit on a lot of levels and excited to be hands-on once again, doing what I do best, I think, and that is sort of the stuff at the rink. You know, I'll be contributing in a lot of ways and looking forward to it.
Yeah, and again, you've something to do with you has left me in sheer panic again.
Uh-oh.
Because now this obviously puts the podcast and the future of the podcast up in the air. I'm not sure how all of this is going to get ironed out, but I know I'm already thinking, like, one of my first series of thoughts were like, I'm super excited for JPAT, and then, oh shit, what does this mean for me? And what does this mean for me if the podcast goes away? I know that they're going to say, like, you have to now step up and do some kind of podcast on your own or with someone. I'm not going to want to do it with anyone. Aww. And I'm already thinking.
Aww, that's so kind of you.
Well, I just, you know, I'm just not. Like, that's, I'm like, how is that? And I'm thinking in my head, like, how is my, okay, so if I don't do it anyone and I'm by myself, how is it going to sound? And it's, you know, all I could think was, it's just going to sound like, fuck.
Yeah, you can't do it by yourself. It's just a monologue.
Tell an IMAX story, play a fish jam. I don't even know what I would do by myself. So
yeah, I mean, your faux outrage would sort of be lost. You know, just you into a microphone by yourself. I draw that out of you. I have a role to play in all of this. Right. And let's be honest, though, up front, I mean, a ton of feedback. It kind of went down like this. When I tweeted out that this was what had happened, I got this job, it was great. What's going on with the podcast? Right. Like, people, there wasn't even punctuation in the sentence. It was like, yeah, great, whatever. What's going on with the podcast? Folks, the podcast is in a state of flux. To be perfectly honest, I don't want to alarm you.
Well, people should be alarmed.
But
I'm alarmed.
We have a summer.
I'm definitely alarmed.
We have a summer now.
So they can be alarmed with me.
Okay. Well, we have a summer to work things out here. Part of the job is I'll no longer be writing for the province. So all writing will be taken in-house over at TSN. And now it's a question of custody of the podcast.
Right.
Battle lines have been drawn right down the middle of this table. Not by me. I want to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
You seem to be expressing interest in keeping the podcast going. And we know the interest. I put it out there. I mean, sort of in fun. But the Twitter poll, and I asked, you know, so does the podcast continue? You know, in like a couple hours, up over 2,000 responses. So again, we've hit on something. When this started, I had no idea where it was going, but it's pretty clear. We've found an audience. They're pretty hardcore. We see them show up out at Eagle Ridge GM, and we appreciate that. And it's become one of the fun projects each week. So absolutely hoping to keep it continuing, but we'll see where it goes, because now there is some ownership stake here. It's a province production, obviously, and I'm stepping away from most of my duties at the province. So I'm going away for a couple weeks in July. You're away for most of August. We weren't going to be doing a lot of podcasts over the summer months.
Right.
And we may be able to, my new job doesn't kick in until late August, so we might be able to squeeze in another one or two here, see if the Canucks do anything in free agency. But we do have
show up in jorts in July. Jorts in July podcast.
I wouldn't lie to the people, the podcast people that have been there for us. I wouldn't lie to you. We've got some work to do to figure out how we get from here to there, because, you know, we'll both be out on the road. There'd be a perfect opportunity, you would think, at times on the road trips. We've done road trip podcasts before. We're you know, veterans. Of that. Yeah, so
the best ones.
We'll see where it goes, but that may have to take some smoothing out at higher levels than this one. We're here because it is draft weekend, and we had a huge success last year in Buffalo doing podcasts the night of the first round and then the second round as well. We're not in Chicago. Coos has it covered on the ground there, but they asked us to do a special draft weekend edition of the podcast, and here we are, all things considered. And again, I have said this on the podcast. You know, I'm no expert when it comes to the players that they select. These are names on a website for the most part for me. I do my research, I do my reading, but look, they are 29th place team, 29th in offense, 29th on the power play. They need offense, they need help, they need it now, but they're going to need it in years to come. They went all in on offense, certainly in the first round and the two picks that they had in the second round. On the surface, I think a pretty successful weekend for the Vancouver Canucks. No, they didn't trade Chris Tanev. And we sent Jim Benning with explicit instructions. You don't come home from Chicago in possession of Chris Tanev. We didn't get what we wanted there. But overall, I kind of like what they did at the draft.
No, I think that, I mean, you shouldn't be ambivalent about it. I think what they did at the draft was really going to feed the appetite of a large percentage of hockey fans who have been craving for the Canucks to draft guys with big upsides and lots of offensive skill. And they clearly did that with number 5 overall in Elias? Are we going with Pedersen?
I'm a Pedersen guy.
You are? You're siding with Pedersen.
Yeah.
Okay. And I talked about him on the last podcast last week and the potential that this is legit. Like the Canucks can draft this guy. And I'm thinking, like, I think I have to go back to 2009 to find a guy that has this kind of skill set that the Canucks have drafted, a guy who has the big, you know, there's some risk there, a little bit undersized, but the big upside and the big ceiling. He's got first line ceiling. And really since Jordan Schrader in 09, like it's all been like these big, like Gonsas and even Jensen and Horvat and Virtanen and even Besser, like it's been size. It hasn't been necessarily the dangle and the dazzle. And obviously Schrader didn't work out. I think that where they drafted in that year, to me, it was kind of worth the chance and the risk that they took. Although, I mean, he's 5'8" and change, and that's a huge difference from where Pedersen is at 6'2" or 6'1" plus. And, you know, I'm thrilled with the pick. I'm thrilled for the fans. I think like this is the kind of guy that you want to be taking with a top 10 pick, a top 5 pick, maybe a lot of top 5 picks. You want more of a sure thing, and he's clearly going to be years away, but still, man, he has a chance to be either a first line center or a first line winger. Huge offensive upside, probably the most upside out of any of the guys that they could have taken right where they were picking in that top 10. And this to me is a departure from where they've gone before. And I think all of those top 3 picks and their forwards were guys with big points. They almost look Canucks Army-esque in the way that the first 3 picks went. And I saw, you know, I've seen a lot of the Canucks Army guys who put in a ton of work and study and watching tape, analyzing the analytics. Like these look like analytics type picks to me. And that's definitely a departure from where they've been before.
Now, it's funny, and I can't remember if I told the story here. I've told the story a few times, though. Right after the combine, the Canucks brought a few guys in, and Pedersen was one of them, brought him into Vancouver. And, you know, he met with the Twins. You've heard that story now. But I talked to somebody that was in Rogers Arena that day when he was there, and the guy was just like, he was blown away by how rail thin Pedersen is. Like, we're not talking, oh, you know, he's undersized. Like, this guy right now.
But I like that. I like that. I really like that he's that thin and was able to produce what he was able to produce in a man's league. Because what's going to happen when he's able to put 15, 20, 25, maybe even 30? Because he's got the frame at 6'2" or thereabouts to do it. And you look back, like I hear a lot of people focusing on whatever he is, 160, 165, like it's, you know, different reports say different things, but he's listed officially in the NHL as 165. Okay. So we go back to that 2014 draft. Ehlers then 162, and Nylander 169. Both of those guys have put on substantial weight since, and look what they've been able to do. You go back to that 14 draft, Virtanen outweighed, he was 208. He outweighed those guys by like 40 pounds each, 50 pounds, basically, when you look at where he was compared to Ehlers. Okay. So to me, this is one of the arguments that I've seen people make. If Glass, Cody Glass, which a lot of people wanted the Canucks to take, if Glass to the Canucks and Pedersen are close, go with the guy who's bigger. And I have the exact opposite feeling. I want the Canucks to go with the guy with the most dangle. Go with the guy with the most upside. Like, tip your hand that way. And the fact that he's already got quantifiable chemistry with Jonathan Dahlin, who is one of their top prospects, man, I'm all in. To me, that makes total sense of why they went with Pedersen on that pick.
All right, well, we've established the fact that the future of the podcast is a little murky right now. So, you know, if things go sideways, I want the legacy of the podcast to be this. And please listen when I say this. I think we're going to crowdsource funds to buy Pedersen a cheeseburger a day. If every listener of the podcast would give us a nickel, we'd get the guy a cheeseburger all day through the summer here. If you donate a dime, we can put cheese on it. We can put bacon on it. Quarter, you know, we could get fries for this guy. We got to do something to help the cause here.
You don't think just meeting with Virtanen and saying, dude, like, what did you do last summer? I want to be on that same program. Like, to me, that may do it, right? Like, if you're going to sit down and show Trampkin videos of Pronger playing, I think right now they sit Pettersson down and they show videos of whatever Virtanen did in the 2016 summer. Dude, Cactus Club, whatever you were doing, whatever meal, Five Guys, whatever it was, this is what you're going to be doing now, Pettersson.
But I'm with you that, you know, just the upside is exciting. Like, you're right. It's a couple years late, but I like the fact that it seems like Canucks management realized the errors of the way. And look, they still want Jake Virtanen to be something for this hockey team. We've talked about that. Maybe it's not going to be in the top six role, but they know now that mistakes were made at the draft table in 2014.
Right.
And so.
And similarly, back then, there's a lot of similarities between these drafts, but back then, Thomas Gradin was the guy huge on Nylander. You got to take Nylander. Like, he loved, as a prospect, William Nylander. And they didn't listen to him. And there were a lot of reasons for it. A lot of reasons have been reported. Some haven't. But I think that Virtanen being local, Virtanen being Canadian, Jim not convinced that Nylander had a two-way game, Nylander's size, like, a lot of things went into that pick, and they were bent going into that draft. Like, you know, they were going to take Nylander. To me, when I look at this process, I think this is the most, like, last year it was Ulevi in January, and it was going to be Ulevi. Yep. If he was there, it was going to be Ulevi. I think when we find out more about this pick, we're going to realize that they were more open as they've ever been, going down the home stretch, doing all their research into, like, taking different guys. And finally, after they were able to kind of compile all of the research, including the combine and interviews and scouting and analytics, I have to believe that analytics played a role in all of this. After they put it all together, they said, you know what, it's got to be Pettersson.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with any of that. And I guess, to me, the question now becomes this mystery discussion that George McPhee apparently had about the second rounder. And Nick Kotsenika has been at this a while, works for Yahoo, has worked for NHL.com. He was the guy that floated this last night. The story had a little bit of steam. I thought people might pick up on it today, but it seems to have died a death now. That George McPhee had suggested that there was a second rounder in play to move up, to flip with the Canucks, five and six.
Did you listen to the Benning scrum? Was he specifically asked about, do you know?
I don't know. We had Benning on the air last night on the draft show that we did, but not the scrum.
Has it been presented to Jim yet that this is what McPhee said? They had a deal in place and McPhee was sending a second rounder, or certainly that's what he suggested, that he was sending a second rounder to the Canucks. It wasn't presented that way.
I don't believe so. I don't know that question has been framed and asked to Jim like that. But again, it does make you wonder a little bit if that was possible for the Vancouver Canucks. You wonder, okay, A, where does the word leak out? Like, how, you know, if in fact that's what happened, if Vegas got wind of the fact that
The way that McPhee framed it was that the deal was in place, and then at the last minute and right before the Canucks pick, we saw Jim on the phone, Weisbrod and him consulting each other, and it was super dramatic. Like, what's happening here? What are these guys talking about? They're talking about this trade with Vegas, we now seem to know. And McPhee says last minute he realized basically the Canucks weren't going to take Glass. And I saw someone tweeted, you know, had this point, kind of created this delicious scenario where what if the Canucks had actually taken Glass with fifth overall and then turned to Vegas and said, we will now trade you Glass if you give us six and a second, if the second was really in play here, which blows my mind that a second round pick would be available to move down a spot. But that's what McPhee suggested, right?
That seemed to be the story last night. But again, the story died a pretty quick death, so.
Well, it died a quick death because no one was asking Jim about it.
Well, that's because we got to get out on the road.
We got to be there.
Got to take this show on. Just another example of why we have to take this show on the road. All right, we covered off Elias Peterson or Pedersen. Again, it's going to be a work in progress to get the name down.
Did he? Did anyone? Did you hear his interview? Did anyone say like how tried, do you pronounce?
Yeah, apparently he did, and I'm not sure that I fully grasped it. Really? So no, I think it was more like Elias Pedersen, I believe, like because almost alias, like
right.
As if okay. You were going with an
I'm
alias.
All in on Pedersen if yep. Everyone's all in and he's okay with it.
Yep. What about day two? What jumped out at you? Anything?
Well, again, like I think that it, like people will point out, oh, the Canucks kind of wasted their season because they tanked. Whether they wanted to or not, they did tank. They ended up with the 29th overall record, and then they got screwed in the lottery. But again, you can see the advantages in the top of that second round at the beginning of day two when they were able to get Lind, a guy who a lot of people had or several people had going in the first round, certainly has comparable first round talent, and they're able to get the guy they wanted who was falling at the top with the second pick in the second round. So there are advantages that go just because you lose the draft lottery and fall a few spots doesn't mean that losing points down the stretch can't pay off. And I think it did. Certainly the potential is there for that to pay off with that pick because I think that they got a really good forward with another guy with big potential offensive upside, which is desperately what they need. Like I like the focus here of getting these guys who have the potential to put up a ton of points at some point in the NHL. Like the potential is there. It may not work out. Obviously, it didn't work out with Schrader. It may not work out with Pedersen because he is like, he's not going to step into a lineup this fall, right? Like he's years away, and how he develops is going to be just as important as the pick itself, which also has me thinking like the Canucks, and I brought this up last week, the Sedins have a huge role in all of this. Because I can tell you right now, if the Sedins retire after this season and next year, it's Horvat centering line one and it's Sutter centering line two, the city is going to be going bananas to get Pedersen some cheeseburgers and to get him into that lineup.
Well, and I thought that last night too. When they made that selection, immediately I thought, all right, this certainly opens the door to a one-year deal for the Twins. Again, we've talked about them sticking around, being the bridge, sort of being the, you know, needing their leadership and their experience more than ever. But Pedersen looks to me like 2 years away
from
least.
2 years away from just playing his first games.
Right.
Not 2 years away from being, yep. A legit top six center. Off we go.
Absolutely.
So there's a huge gap here, okay? And let's say that the Sedins say, no, we don't want, like, I think they're going to need 2 1-year deals to do this properly right now. And there's a strong argument to be made, you know, let the Sedins go, tank, who cares? And I can see why you would make that argument. And I can see the case for it. At the same time, you don't want the Canucks in a position, and the Canucks don't want to be in a position. They won't want to be in a position where they're feeling kind of cornered into a spot where they got to try to put Pedersen into a lineup where he's not ready for it. So what's that going to mean? It means they're either going to try to sign, like the Sedins leave. Now what? Oh, shit, we got to sign a top six center. Good luck doing that. Very few legit top six centers even make it to free agency. And those that do are wanted by the good teams who are willing to pay for guys like that. And the other choice is to try to trade for them. And there's two scenarios where you can try to trade for one, right? You can try to young assets or picks, which a rebuilding team can't do. Or you move a guy, one of your veterans like Tanev, which, oh my God, like you cannot waste Tanev or a guy like that on a place sitter waiting for Dahlin and Pedersen to arrive. So I think they absolutely need the Sedins, not only on a 1 year deal, like they needed them on 2 1-year deals coming up,
right? But not a 2 year deal.
No, not a 2 year deal. I wouldn't do it because injuries and there's all kinds of.
I know.
There's no reason for it. There's no reason for a 2 year deal. Like we've gone.
I'm with you, but again, like until I see their names on 1 year contracts 2 years in a row,
right? Thinking that's going to be.
I think that door is open, given what they've done and what they've meant to this organization.
But a lot of people thought about that, about Miller, and Miller was only offered a 1 year deal.
So they're learning. analytics at the draft.
I'm suggesting maybe.
Veterans.
I don't know for sure, but it looks that way. Things are changing.
This might be a watershed weekend in the history of the Vancouver Canucks, or at least this management group. There's so many things I want to cover off here as we carry on this special draft weekend edition of the PatCast, brought to you by Eagle Ridge GM. And again, if you're in the market for a vehicle, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, 2595 Barnett Highway, if you're interested in visiting the staff and checking out the showroom or the lot. You mentioned Tanev. He's still property of the Vancouver Canucks, so the trade Tanev Club has failed. Bow our heads here momentarily. We haven't given up entirely, because we saw last year in Buffalo the teams left the draft and then the big trades happened a few days later, right? So
But we do know, like, that was bullshit. Like, they were not trying to trade Chris Tanev at all. Like, now looking in hindsight and putting all the pieces together, they absolutely were not trying to trade Tanev. They had no intention. In fact, I would argue that once they lost Trampkin, there was no way that they were going to entertain trading Chris Tanev. Now, if someone wanted to step up, as Jim says, and give me a young defense, like, who's going to give them a young, like, that was never how a Tanev trade was going to work out. A young, up and coming defenseman for him. That's really, I don't think that you can put together a Tanev trade like that. I think that that's what Jim was going for. I think he was asking for a ton to the couple of the teams that did call. And sure, they lowballed him, but they weren't shopping Chris Tanev. So this idea that there's no market for Chris Tanev because he's not, quote unquote, as good as you think he is, I think is a total crock. I don't buy it at all. I think that anyone breaking this down is going to see he's got a better contract than Hamonic. I think he's a better player than Hamonic, certainly on the same level as Hamonic. And Hamonic is just as injury prone and just went for a first and 2 seconds.
Right.
He has value, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But what do you, from Calgary's perspective, giving up a first and 2 seconds to get a guy like Hamonic to add to what's already a pretty good defense? And I guess a lot of what Calgary's doing is with an eye to what's happening up north in Edmonton now and trying to, you know, find a way to slow down and ultimately stop the Edmonton Oilers. But
Great for Calgary. I mean, they paid a big premium to bring him in and to make that trade happen. But I also think, like, what are the teams that are out on Hamonic, like Dallas and Toronto, thinking? And what could that mean for the Trey Tanev Club? But if there's not a willingness from Jim to go for picks, and there doesn't seem to be in a trade like this, that's when I start, thinking, this may not work out as great as I once thought it did. Although, if they work toward the trade deadline and he trades for, a guy that was just drafted and, the kind of Dallin Goldobins of the world, I would be fine with that. But the Hamonic deal is the kind of deal that I wanted the Canucks to get for Tanev this week.
So help me out here. Like, what do I do now? Because I had come around, you had convinced me here, our weekly meetings to do the PatCast, and I paid my dues. I became a voting member of the Trade Tanev Club. I know, but what do I do? Like, I went and I got my car wrapped. I'm driving down the street with Trade Tanev all over, and people would look, they'd honk and stuff. I get the thumbs up, but now I've got a car that's wrapped in Trade Tanev. Like, what do I do? Do I keep it? Do I leave it that way? Because I haven't given up entirely. A team like Dallas, I don't think they're out of the woods. I know they took Heiskanen in the draft yesterday. That's for down the road. If they are serious about winning now, do they double back once free agency comes and goes? There are certain pressure points. The draft is one of them. Free agency is another for teams that aren't able to do what they want to do in free agency. So I haven't given up entirely. I mean, I kind of have, but I haven't.
Have you? Like, the Canucks are rebuilding. Like, they have to do some rebuilding things, right? Like you look at all the deals that Vegas – and here's the other one. And this is kind of getting overshadowed by the TTC and Trade Tanev Club, is that the Canucks have $19 million in cap space, 19 plus. Vegas just pulled off a string of trades where they took shitty contracts back and they got top picks. Like, they got, like, real live valuable assets for taking these contracts and weaponizing their massive amounts of cap space. There is no way on July 1
the Canucks are going to be able to spend that $19.5 million in cap space. The bigger story almost than Tanev, because Tanev can wait, right? Like Tanev can be a trade deadline thing. Jim seems to be better at those trades than any other, so I'm
but
okay.
You know full,
I'm okay with
okay,
that.
But you know full well Tanev's going to be in a walking boot on the trade deadline. You know that. I think we sit here now.
I think this is the year that he stays healthy. I want him with Edler. I think that that's the best combo. I think that that's where he has the best chance to stay healthiest. Like, he's not going to be lugging Lucas Spezza, right? Like, that's a big stone to be carrying all over the ice every day. Like, I can see how, like, things, like, you do extra things and put you in jeopardy of, like, breaking your foot, tearing quads, all of that. But why not weaponize that cap space this weekend to get picks this weekend? Like, Vegas just did it. They could have been doing stuff like that. They could have been doing stuff like that for the past couple of weeks, and they had no inclination. There was nothing tying them to deals like that, and that's one of the most surprising. Love the picks, especially the top four, even the goalie. I think DiPietro has a huge upside. I don't like the fact that they weren't able to acquire and didn't really make an effort. Like, even the Tanev thing, got to have a young defenseman. Where's the we need more picks? Let's do this. We're drafting, you know, we've got the right strategy here in the draft. Let's take on a crappy contract right now and get another first, get another second, get another third.
I've told you before, Botch, I'll say it again, though. The concept is great in theory until I see them pull off that kind of deal, though.
But you did see Vegas do it.
We've seen lots of teams do it. Right. I mean, Toronto's used that strategy. Vegas using that strategy. And again, I have to believe that people in that Canuck front office know that that's a road that they could go down. We just haven't seen them do it yet. So I'm with you. If we want to put the trade Tanev like flyers and T-shirts and stuff on the shelf,
right?
Now it's use weaponize cap space. That's the mantra for this week, and we'll get some new T-shirts printed up here. We'll run them around town and see if we can't make that one happen. We talked about Cole Lind. I like the idea. I mean, the Canucks have been crapped on for years for ignoring their backyard. I'm not one that buys into that so much. I mean, they took Jake Virtanen a couple of years back. You know, there have been Western League guys that have been right there under their nose. Brendan Gallagher comes to mind, but like every team passed him a bunch of times. Same thing with Jamie Benn. But I do like that idea of having a prospect in your backyard for the next year or two. You know, people in Kelowna can watch him. He comes down, he plays the Giants. He'll be part of the Young Stars tournament in Penticton. That was announced last week. That's going to happen again. So a thrill for him, I'm sure, for a guy that's playing his junior hockey in Kelowna to get to throw on a Canuck jersey for the first time in game action at the Penticton Young Stars. And I like Lind. As you said, a lot of people had him late first round, and to get him early in the second, I think there's value there. And then to use that pick that they got from Columbus. I mean, that was the freebie, the gift pick, right, for signing Tortorella. And I just kind of like the fact that they used it on a John Tortorella kind of guy in Jonah Gadjevic, who 46 goals in the Ontario right. Hockey League. Like, the first picture, like, when I heard that they had picked him, and I clicked on one of the websites and I was looking for a little info on him, and the first picture, you know, is him, blood just drooling down his face, and I thought, like, you know, Torts would like that kind of guy. Like, it's almost like an homage to, you know, the John Tortorella year that they got this pick, and they used it on a guy who, you know, scored 46 goals, but he's got stiffness to his game, as Torts would like to say.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great spot for a guy like that. When it's Virtanen and it's number 6 overall,
not so much.
Maybe not. But right there, I think that that's another pick that I feel that they nailed. Like, I think that they nailed the top 4 picks, right? And I'm having a really hard time to focus right now because I just can't get over this Tanev thing. Because I don't get, like, why is he seeking... What, like, we'll trade Tanev, but only if we get a defenseman to replace Tanev. Like, well, I don't understand why that's the logic. Like, if you're good.
Well, there isn't a ton of logic because I heard him say it. I heard him say, I'm talking to him, Jim, when they lost Lucas Spezza, and then he was asked point blank about Tanev ahead of the draft as well. And he pointed to both guys. And even last week when they signed Erik Gudbranson, all three of these guys, Jim Benning, pointed to them being good penalty killers.
Penalty kill was awful.
Penalty kill was
29.
It was 28. The power play 28? Was 29.
Right. And I looked. Three, and he kept saying that about Spezza, and I looked. And like, he played every game this year. And the penalty kill was 28th.
Yes.
And the year before, he played half of the games, and the penalty kill was 17. It was driving me nuts. And like, Spies is it, like, that's the guy who you can find anyone. Like, Cody Franson can never find a job. Just bring in Cody Franson. There you have a guy that's better than Spezza. Like, guys are going to be all over free agency that are just as good as Spezza, if not better, for way cheaper. So how does Spezza leaving change anything? So, and who cares anyway? Like, all of these picks, like, okay, Pedersen, Dahlin, Goldobin, like, all of these guys, the score four, like, these guys, and now you can add in Pedersen to the score five. Like, these guys are going to be dependent on to be the next core, the guys who are going to help make this team relevant and competitive again. They're years away. So who cares what happens? Like, I don't, like, just sign someone to replace Tanev for a while. Like, it'll be fine. It'll be just fine. You were happy with Spezza. Just have, like, have someone else sit there for a year or two while you get picks and prospects, that type of thing for Tanev. So it's dry. I can't get over this. Trey Tanev is being destroyed because Jim says, we got it. We need, we'll trade Tanev, but we need a Tanev replacement in return who is a bit younger.
So they lose Spezza to expansion. I watched the other night the awards show, the expansion draft, all in one, a bit of a messy presentation. But hey, you do what you want to do. You're the NHL. But I laughed because we talked about, remember, the highlight video for Tanev. Like, if a team made the trade for Tanev and they were trying to show their fans what they got. And as they made these picks, Vegas made the picks, you know, they had a highlight reel for Lucas Spezza. But then I was thinking to myself, like, what if it had been Gaunce? Like, what would they have shown to a league-wide audience? You know,
there's not even, like, a big hit or anything.
No.
There's not even, like, a dramatic shot block. There's not, like, there's no hitting.
Because you saw that some, I can't remember who it was, but one of the many creative minds out in social media, you know, took our challenge and came up with, like, a Chris Tanev pamphlet or a, right. and they had the 74-foot pass and they had the laser beam eyes, and it was great. Like, I got a kick out of it. But then I was thinking, like, all right, maybe we up the game here. And what do you do for a highlight video for Brendan Gaunce?
I don't know.
His one NHL goal on a loop?
You're going to need, it's going to be a slideshow of photos of him with, like, Corsi stats, like analytics, underlying data.
Well, I thought they might have to resort to, like, the oldest school or the oldest trick in the book, like the minor hockey photos, like Christmas morning, getting the skates and the stick. And,
well, yeah, he's got Utica highlights. They can show the exciting goals from, like, Utica, right?
But they're always that grainy video that you can't. Like, do they not have a television camera in Utica? Could they not? It's in New York State. Could somebody not drive into the Big Apple?
You just need a phone for, like, clear imagery.
I've never seen good video out of Utica, ever. Like, I don't care if, you know, if Virtanen had the game of his life last season and, like, went off, you know, a hat trick and two assists, like a 5-point night, like, the video wouldn't exist. Like, you just have to fight through it. I always watch. I'm squinting. I'm trying to pick out, like, who the player is. And, okay, he's right-handed. Maybe that's Virtanen on the video. It's just way too much work. Come on, Utica. Get some better video equipment.
And the Canucks long knew that they knew that they were going to lose Spezza. Like, it's just the reality. They weren't. Vegas was, I don't think Vegas ever really considered taking Gaunce. I don't see it. Surgery, injured, no goals, poor highlight package. Just wasn't happening, right?
Yeah.
So, again, they see it as a huge deal. They've kind of painted it. I feel it kind of gives them an escape clause on the Tanev thing because, hey, look, guys, we lost Spezza. What can we do now? To which a lot of us, who cares? It's Spezza.
So Spezza's gone. Trampkin's gone. Philip Larson never really was, but he's gone as well. I mean, there's three guys that spent some time in Canuck uniforms. Where do you stand on Ylevi making this team out of camp?
I'm not really buying. I know that they're kind of pitching that he's got a possibility to make the team. I don't really believe it. I think that they're gun shy on this kind of stuff after Virtanen and McCann. Like, they kind of look back at those guys as not being mentally prepared for the NHL and not being able to deal with it from a maturity level. And I think that they're really going to be anxious and have a lot of anxiety about rushing. Like, I don't think that they want to rush Besser. I don't think they'll have a choice. I think Besser's going to be in the lineup opening night. But I think, you know, when they're having their planning meetings a year ago, they're saying, oh, no, like, let's start Besser in Utica and we'll have him learn the game and then come up later in the season when he's, you know, we feel he's more ready. But I think Besser is in the opening lineup, and I don't think Yolevi's given a real shot at making the team. Like, they weren't going to bring him up. Like, there was an opportunity there this past season if his season had ended early enough where they could have brought him to the NHL right. to play games, and they didn't feel he was ready to play a couple of games. So how is that going to change dramatically in 3-4 months?
So we're going to have to endure 2 full seasons of Matthew Tkachuk in the NHL?
I think so.
Oh, man. And the guys that were picked like just ahead of him were up for the Rookie of the Year, and obviously Austin Matthews won it, and I get special players, but yeah. They were that close on the draft board, but miles apart, obviously. Any tears shed in the Canuck camp, do you think, when word came out yesterday just before the draft that TJ Oshie's not going to be available as a free agent?
What are they saving their cap space for? Like, that's what I want answered now.
Horvat's just sitting back. Like, 19 mil, bring it.
give it all to me. It's all mine. Like, you know, and obviously they played a bit of hardball with Miller. And that they gave him a contract with a lot of incentives in it. So that was a bit surprising. I thought that given how much Jim like is banking on Miller to come back, that's the way that they would go to try to win him over, you know, going to the 1-year deal. Credit to them, because they don't really need Ryan Miller. I don't think they need Miller at all. I think Markstrom would be fine. And, you know, personally, if it were me, I'd bring Eddie Lack back. I'd have Markstrom and Lack, get the old band back together, see what that could do. But the Canucks don't have the balls for bringing Lack. So, like the rumors before the expansion draft were that Miller wasn't coming back. And Jim, I believe, met with Liut on Tuesday night and still no deal. So I think that if there's no announcement in the next couple of days, he's got to be going to free agency, right?
Right, because we're into this, I think starting on Monday, we're into that speed dating week, if you will, where you can get around and talk to people and shop your services. And if you're Miller and his camp, why in the world wouldn't you?
So yeah, you've been calling that for a while. Like, why not test the market? And certainly if you're Miller's side and you go, okay, your best offer is an incentive-laden 1-year deal, yeah, of course he's going to go and you know, check out other things. So obviously the Canucks have a plan B. I've been trying to rack my brain on what that plan B might be. It's not Eddie Lack.
I'm envisioning Eddie Lack and Jacob Markstrom sitting side, like being stallmates. Like, those guys are so polar. Like, they are at the ends of the spectrum in the National Hockey League when it comes to just enjoying
life
and living it up. And I can't imagine them sharing a locker or a net, for that matter. Right. So I for so many reasons, I don't see that one happening going back down Eddie Lack lane.
Right, which could mean, like, Eddie Lack's in trouble. Like, he's going to be in tough to even get any NHL job. I'm a bit concerned about how it's going to play out for him. Definitely, I think that the Carolina thing was, you know, I think looking back, it's going to be viewed as the worst thing that could have happened to him. He didn't click with the goalie coach there. There's all kinds of complex reasons why. But man, he's going to be in really tough. So what would be a Benning move now if it's not Miller?
Like, well, is this new era Jim? Like, is this the guy that used analytics this weekend and went with the incentive laden? Like, this is, you know, we've tried to pigeonhole Jim in so many ways, but this sounds like, you know, a window has been left open at Rogers Arena and some new air has, you know, blown in, a wind has blown in there to change his thinking because, you know, forget Eddie Lack. How about Cam Ward? Like, take Cam Ward off Carolina's hands. They've got 3 goalies. They've got a logjam there for a year. Take the contract and get them to sweeten it with something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would look into any deals like that, right? Like the Dallas goalies. Like, and I'm
Jim
all
Neal
in.
Said today that he thought he was going to buy out one of those guys. So it sounds like the days of the Stars actually shipping out one of those contracts might be numbered. Now, that might have been posturing. Who knows? But
they've always seemed really, like, everyone kept saying, like, oh, just grab a Dallas goalie, but he's always seemed like super reluctant about giving up any kind of asset for someone to take one of the goalies. And yeah, you're right. Like, the buyout, it's not even that bad for Niemi. looks. I can't remember what it was, but I looked at it. It was just a couple years, and wasn't much. It didn't look overly prohibitive at all. So yeah, why not buy one of those guys out? But sure, if they can get a goalie, you know, and I'll be stunned if that, and so will you, because you don't believe in the weaponizing cat. You don't believe that they're even considering it.
I believe in the theory. I'm not sure that I believe that they can or will pull it off. So let's see what happens here in these days ahead. I want to mention this one as well, because for me, in the days leading up to the draft, this was one of my favorite moments. And it happened on the air on 1040. I don't know if you heard it, but Jim was on the midday program. And you know that Sakaris has been going on about wingspan of guys and prospects. And wingspan has become sort of this catchphrase buzzword on the midday show. For whatever reason, that was a hill that Sakaris wanted to climb. So there they are. They've got Jim on location in Chicago. And, you know, the interview's going along fine. And in the middle of it, Jim drops... He drops a wingspan on Sakaris. Like, he dunked on Sakaris. Like, it was legitimately funny. I was laughing as I'm sitting at home listening to this. And I thought, good on you, Jim. Like, there have been so many moments where, you know, you've opened your mouth and we've all kind of questioned what came right out. This was legitimately funny. Like, the timing was perfect. You know, the execution. I don't know if he had practiced it in front of a mirror in the morning, but it almost sounded rehearsed. And then, as... You know, Sakaris is laughing. Bryce is laughing along with him. Like, before the laughter has stopped, Jim has to admit that he was set up. Oh, I was told to say, and no.
Had to pull back the curtain,
stop it. Just, don't. Like, you just owned it. Like, it was yours for a few minutes or moments there. Oh, I was told to say, and no.
Yeah.
It all came crashing down around him.
It's like Stephen Colbert making a great Trump joke that kills. The place is going nuts. He's like, hold on. Like, my writer over there, that's not...
Yeah, the writer holding the cue card and they cut to him, like a thumbs up from the... No, right. Just like, own it. It was there. It was you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
That was that's too bad. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because Jim hasn't had many more. He hasn't had many bringing down the house moments. You know, I can't imagine. I can't even picture any. How many have there been? He doesn't attempt jokes very often.
Jim at the Improv. I'm just... Ladies and gentlemen.
Opening for Bill Burr.
Put your hands together for Jim Benning.
It's got to be Tuesday Jim.
Or is it
New Era Jim? New Era Jim.
Yeah, it would have to be one of those two characters. No question about it. Schedule came out this week. What do you look for when the schedule's released?
I haven't really gone over it. I'm sure, like, with your new position, you're looking at some of those. How many long trips are there?
Oh, there's a bunch.
Like six gamers? Or
there's a 7-gamer, but it's split 5 and 2 around the league-mandated break, so it's not really a 7-game. But it ends on the 5-gamer, obviously, it ends on the road, and then they start up on the road again. So,
and when are we going to see Drancer in Florida? When do you have you?
Late in the season. I did look at that. I have to admit, I took the schedule. I thought, like, all right, who do I know in some of these cities? Like, I've told my sister in Calgary, like, I better get a dinner out of it. Every time I'm in Calgary, I'm coming over for dinner. So, I was looking around, like, who do I know? Where do they live? Okay, we go there then. And Drancer, Florida is.
Sure enough, there he was. Big role.
TV time. The cameras just love him.
They do.
Oh.
And he's got that floral tie. And these guys are telling me that, like, they kept telling me jorts. We're in last year. He pulled off the jorts in Buffalo. This year, they're telling me floral ties are like super in. And there was Drance cutting edge once again in a floral tie.
But it's funny because there's 31 teams now. The coverage I saw a couple of media relations guys. And I know them now. Like, you know who they are around the league.
Yeah.
The average fan probably wouldn't. But doing what we do, you get to know these guys. In a weekend of the draft, I saw 2 or 3 get camera time, and of course, he's one of them. Just like the draft lottery when he was in the chamber with the balls and the commissioner. There were like 10 people in that room, and somehow he was one of them.
He's a main, like, I feel like he's climbed the ranks of PR guys in the league already. Like, he's one of the top. Even seeing him in that like secluded spot with the seat, and
do they have an association? Do you know? Like, everybody's got their own associations, and I wonder, like, is he the president of the media relations association? They meet at the draft. They have their own meetings and stuff.
I'm sure he's in the executive already. Like, there's no way he's not. He's up there. I mean, you don't go around enough. Like, how many of the guys are wearing floral ties out there? He's got a floral tie.
All right. So this brings it full circle. And as we wrap up our special draft weekend edition of the podcast and we set off the hop. I mean, it's the reality of the situation. I'm delighted to have as much security as you can get in this business, but nice to have signed off on my deal. It's done. I have a new job, but it's left the podcast now in this state of flux. So, like, honestly, as I sit here today, who do you think could broker a deal between the two sides to get this thing done?
I don't know. Who could we bring in? I mean, could we bring – I mean, Trampkin could do it.
Oh,
he's not, he's not here.
We just spent 5 minutes talking about the guy.
Oh, Drance could do it. Would do it for sure.
That's what I'm
– But he's not – you think that he's so busy.
Got the summer off. Come on. After July 1st.
So we call up Drancer. We bring him in. He gets the sides together in a meeting.
He likes to work in these enclosed spaces and these like hotel ballrooms and stuff.
He's got to be expensive now, though. Like, what's he charging per hour for consulting like that?
It's not about cost, but this is far more important than money.
Like, what couldn't I feel like now he could have negotiated your contract on this new job and probably. I'm now thinking he could have got you more money. Oh. Like, yeah. How do you turn? He walks in with a floral tie.
How do you say no to that?
You're just like, okay, yeah, the podcast stays, and JPAT's going to get quadruple what Sportsnet was offering. Here you go. I feel he could do it.
Too late now, unfortunately. Maybe I
can't turn back time?
I don't think so. But let's hope that we can figure this out. Because, again, I think there is an appetite in this marketplace for what we've been doing. I think the people have spoken, and the reaction we get, I appreciate it a ton. And I do want to say, without getting all weepy here, but...
It's okay. You can
no,
weep.
No, I'm not going to get weepy.
You can weep.
I want to publicly thank the province, the people of the province. J-Mac's not here anymore, but I reached out to him, talked to Paul Chapman yesterday as well. Because, look, 20 months ago, I was out on the street, as you said. I was applying for jobs. I couldn't get a job, but I was applying for jobs. I thought maybe... the ship had sailed as far as, a continuation in this career. And this is what I love to do. And so to be able to get back in and not just kind of where I was, but to add this element of travel, it's going to be an adventure. I'm sure it'll be a grind. You tell me, middle of the season, sitting in airports, probably not the time of your life, but it comes with the territory. I'm certainly looking forward to it. So as a guy that's never traveled, it's another element, it's another layer of this job. I wasn't sure that something like this was ever going to happen for me. And without the province... And I want to say, too, as much fun as we have taking runs at the guys at Canucks Army, you know, they reached out, and it was Drancer back then.
Right.
When he was merely the head of the Army, and now look where he is. But,
He saw something in you.
No, but these were the organizations that reached out. And for me, it was an opportunity to stay relevant in the market, keep my name and my face out there. People have told me I tweet too much. I told them, honestly, Twitter kept me in the mix for a while there before I kind of got back on my feet and found a little bit of work. And here we are all these months later. So I thank everybody at the province. I'm not going to be writing for the province any longer. But somehow, some way with this podcast and this production, I hope that this relationship does continue.
Are you going to do? Is there going to be a farewell column maybe for the province?
I don't think there'll be a farewell. There'll be one more column. There'll be something in Sunday's paper, but it's
not. Oh, there will?
Yeah. But then that's it. And as we said earlier, like I'm away for the first couple of weeks of July. You're running wild in August. There weren't going to be many podcasts through the summer months.
Right.
So, if it goes dark for a little while, don't think that they've absolutely pulled the plug. We just got to figure out a way to get
from
here to
there
at
the
start of training camp.
Because I think the podcast on the road has a lot of there's a lot of potential. Pedersen-like first-line potential right there.
And it could start in Penticton.
There you go.
It might start soon as Penticton. So that's going to – it's too nice to be inside. We got to get out into the sunshine.
That's it. That's all.
That is it. I think a fairly successful weekend for the Vancouver Canucks, and we'll see what the next 7 days bring here as they work to July 1st. Again, not expecting an awful lot, but they found Jason Megna around this time 1 year ago. So you just never know what free agency is going to bring.
I just got this text.
Late-breaking news?
Yeah. There's already some buzz that the Canucks feel they could be better than people think next season.
Oh, boy. So now the bar is the bar coming back?
I feel the bar's coming back. They've got $19 million to spend. I'm telling you,
How are they going to do it with the penalty killing, though? All those penalty killers. Oh, man.
Late breaking.
Again, thanks to Eagle Ridge GM, terrific partners of the podcast. And again, we urge you, if you are in the market for a vehicle, start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. Check them out on the showroom floor or the lot, 2595 Barnett Highway, a couple of blocks west of Coquitlam Center. And we can tell you that because we were there on Monday night, and we thank Eagle Ridge for having us. That's going to do it. Another PatCast here on Province Radio.